We left off on that Lamed Chesem at Aleph. We had just spent a fair amount of time talking about liquids. And so now, the Gemara is going to continue to talk about the processing of food and what it might do to the bracha. So, the Gemara that we're actually up to, is the following. It's Amar Le'ahu Mei Rabbanan. It's about 14 lines down on Lamed Ches Amid Aleph. So, the Gemara says, Amar Le'ahu Mei Rabbanan L'Rava. Terima Mahu. You asked Rava, what bracha do you make on Terima? So Rava here was, as occasionally happens, sometimes people ask the question. David, maybe you would appreciate this in the conference today that I spoke at. So Rabbi Shalom Carmi, who was one of my teachers and who was a really brilliant mind. So he raised his hand. He was going to throw in questions. It turned out they were mostly comments, which was good, but I was terrified. He would ask a question and I just wouldn't understand it. It would go over my head. So fortunately it didn't. So here, this is not so intellectually, conceptually sophisticated, but he asks Rava, what bracha do they make on Trima? So Rava is like at a loss. The Gemara says that lav hava daite de Rava mecha amelei. Rava was like frozen. He couldn't figure out, well, what is Trima? What is he asking me? So Yosef Ravina kamei de Rava. So Ravina, who was sitting there, who picked up on what was going on, he both knew what Trima was and he realized that Rava was frozen on it. So he decided to ask the guy questions. The guy who asked the question, well, the shum shemei kamris or the kurtamei kamris, or the Purtzene Ka'amris. Which kind of Trima do you want? And he gave him three choices. The first one is Purtzene, which is Karkom, which is saffron. And the second one is The first one is Shum Shemei is sesame. And the last one is Purtzene is grapes that are, and all these things are things that are ground up. You grind them up, but you're not squeezing them out. So you're not taking the grape, squeezing it out, you just have the juice. You marasake the grape, you grind it up. You grind up the sesame, that's I think what we would call trina, and which is literally grinding, something which is ground up, that's why it's called trina. And I don't know what exactly porcini is. It's translated, Rashi translated as carcomb, but I don't know how you grind up saffron. Saffron is probably one of the most expensive by weight foods that you will ever encounter. I think I mentioned this before in Costco, where they have a little container with a tiny bit of saffron. So I think like when you calculate the cost per pound, it's about $4,500. Or the last time it might have been a few years ago. So I don't think this is ground up saffron. I can't, or it's not the few couple of petals inside or whatever you call those little things that with the stems, which are the real part of the saffron. Maybe it's the flower of the saffron. But he was asking what happens when you take a fruit, and you grind it up. Some versions of the Gemara even, they point out on the side, have also, Ravina said, is it this, that, the other thing he also said, dates. What if you take grapes, dates, and not that you squeeze out or you get honey to ooze out of it, but you kind of grind it, so you get a paste. So once he asked that, the hachi v'achi, once he was doing that, so Rava picked up on, he realized what Terima was. Rava finally figured out what he was asking. Amarlei, chashilta vaday ka'amris. You're talking about chashilta, which is something that is very well ground up. Adkartan milsa, and you have reminded us of something, hata amaravasi, something that Ravasi said. Hai tamre shel truma mutar lasos mehem trima, the osar lasos mehem shecha. So Ravasi said that you're allowed to take dates of truma, and you're not allowed to be mastered truma. You can't in effect destroy it to eat it. I mean, you can, when you eat it, if you eat it whole, you destroy it, but you can't take the fruit, do something to it where you're not going to consume the whole thing and you ruin the fruit. So beer, date beer, you're not allowed to make out of it. That's not called eating the pre of truma. But if you want to make truma, if you want to just make a paste out of it, that's acceptable. From the fact that you're allowed to do that to dates of truma, it shows you that when you grind up fruit like that, it still retains the status of fruit. And hence, you can extrapolate, Rava says, from that case to the bracha that you would make a bori prihai. So therefore, the Gemara says, V'hilchasa, tamrei v'avdinu terima, mevarchan ilavayu bori prihai. If you have
dates, and you make them into trima, you make a bar of dates. My taima, why? Bimosayu taimi ki the meikara. It retains its original status. You fundamentally haven't changed it. It's not like getting juice out, which is not the ikar ha-pri. It's not like, you know, cooking the pri, which might be a different story. That the Gemara is going to talk about on the base. Cooking vegetables, and the Rishonim assume it probably applies for cooking fruits as well. But here, all you're doing is you're grinding it up, and because you don't process it with any form of heat, anything that's considered bishul of some kind, therefore it retains its original status. If you look in Shulchan Aruch here, I'm just going to read to you, in Simen Reish Beis, the Mechaber writes, one moment, the Mechaber writes that Smorim Shemiachon Biyad, if you take dates and you crush them by hand, Va'asa Mehem Isa, and you make it almost into a dough, it's a paste. Va'hotzi Mehem Garinem, you take out the pits, Afilu Hachi Lo Nishtana Birchasan, the bracha remains the same, Umavarech Alehem Borei Periyah Eitz, you make, as you would expect, the Borei Periyah And then the Ramah quotes another substance, I don't know, as lapurin. I don't know exactly what that particular food is, which is also called havidala. And mevarchan aleihem borei pri. The Ramah says it would be same thing would be true with these other fruits. But then he says, v'yesh omer mevarech aleihem shahakol. There are those who say no, that you actually make a shahakol. And there's a machlokas what the Ramah means here. Does he mean only on this substance he quoted, this havidalo, or he meant even on the trima that the Mechaber had? And he says, the Ramah says, the tov lachush l'chatzila l'varei shahako, avlam birech varei preitz yatsak yifein ericha. The Ramah thinks that really the correct opinion, is that you make a varei preitz, but there are those who thought that once it's changed that way, you should make a shahako. He thinks it's better to make a shahako, but if you made a varei preitz, it's not the end of the world. Okay, so date juice or date honey, you make a bore, you make a shahakol on according to the Gemara, the way we discussed last week, although there are other opinions. But when it comes to date paste, that is still considered fruit. Therefore, you make a bore pri hayetz. Okay, now the Gemara continues. Shesisa. What is shesisa? So Rashi explains that shesisa is some type of flour. Rashi writes that it's flour that was made from kernels that were dried in the oven, that were really roasted in the oven when the grain was still moist. As opposed to letting the grain dry out on its own, you stick it in the oven, you roast it that way, and then you grind up the kernels. Now, as we'll see in a little bit, I'm no expert in this, but it appears that when they would grind it up, it would not make a very fine flour. That will have relevance in the laws of Shabbos, as I'll explain in a little bit. But for the moment, you're dealing with some type of flour, but not real flour, not standard flour. And Shulchan Aruch, I believe, it describes the substance of shesisa differently than Rashi. It describes shesisa as grain that never fully ripened, or never, didn't even reach the stage. It didn't reach shlish bishulo, a third of the ripeness. So normally, it would normally never be chayiv in trumas and maisis because it didn't reach the stage of pri. But it is a food that's coming from, let's say, wheat that you grind up. You now make flour out of these unripe kernels. And then what you do with this, with that flour, Rashi says, is that you must mix it, with some type of a liquid. That liquid may be vinegar, actually. And you now either have something of a, there's a different possible densities. You can have something that's more like a paste, or almost like a dough, I should say, or you can have something that's very loose. So the Gemara says that shesisa, Rav Omar shakol miyabidvaro, u'shmuel Omar gori minei mizonos. So Rav says you make a shahakol on it, and Shmuel says you make a mizonos on it. Now, you would have actually expected Shmuel's opinion is the one that you would have expected here. And in fact, what's more surprising is you would have expected that Rav would agree with Shmuel. Because if you remember from a daf ago, Rav and Shmuel are the ones who say that kol shehu mechamesha saminim and kol sheyeshbo mechamesha saminim mevarchad alav borim yinei mizonos. Remember, borim yinei mizonos is not a bracha that's found in the Mishnah. But Rav and Shmuel are the ones that we, at least in the Gemara, were the first ones to present this idea of borim yinei mizonos. We reject Rav and Shmuel's opinion, if you remember, where they say Kol shehu mechamesh saminim mevarach ala brei mezonos, because we make mezonos even on something that's not from the five minim, namely rice. But the other statement the Gemara says we do accept, that anything where it's, you're not eating the grain itself, but it's an ingredient, and it's not just a thickener. So kol sheyesh bo mechamesh saminim, we accept Rav and Shmuel's position. So certainly Rav should have agreed with Shmuel here that shesisa, that's being made from some type of a flour, not a standard flour, you would have expected that Rav would agree with Shmuel that it's a mezonos. And yet, they seemingly argue. So comes along Rav Chisda, and he says, I'm a Rav Chisda v'lotzihi. There's actually no debate between Rav and Shmuel. Haba ava, haba raka. It depends upon whether or not it's very thick consistency, or it's a very loose consistency. Whether it's ava or raka. How so? So he says, ava lachdi la'abdi la. When you make it thick, then what you're doing this for eating purposes. However, raka, lirafua ka'avdilo. If you make it very loose, almost like not quite a drink, but close to it, that consistency, then it's not meant generally for eating. It's really meant as a kind of medicine. And if you remember on Daf Lamed Vavam and Aleph, the Gemara pointed out, and it's going to repeat the same notion here, that if there's something, a food that you eat, and you eat it as a food, but it is food, but you eat it for refuah purposes, the Gemara said you might have thought that you don't make a bracha at all because it's primarily the refuah. And the Gemara's conclusion is that since you do derive hana, benefit, pleasure of eating it, therefore you have to make a bracha on it. But as it will turn out, since it's not primarily intended as a food, it's primarily intended as a medicine, since you're getting hana, you make a bracha, but since it's not really a food, bracha that you make is a catchful of shahakol, it doesn't get the special bracha of mezonos. So this was Rav Chisda's proposal to reconcile the two, and that is, how we passed. Now, Masif Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef challenges Rav Chisda. He says, V'shavim shebochashin et hashtus v'shavim v'shosim v'esom hamisri. Now, this brisa is found at the end of Masechah Shabbos, and here I want to provide a little bit of background. There is a prohibition of engaging in healing on Shabbos. Now, what does that mean? That seems ridiculous on the surface, because you all know that if there's a life-threatening emergency, well, of course you engage in healing. So, we're obviously not talking about a situation of pikuach nefesh. In fact, not only are we not talking about a situation of pikuach nefesh, but we're not even talking about someone who's really sick. We're not talking about someone who's no fel mishka, which is not an easy category to define, but I think that we tend to be very lenient about it. So anything that interferes fundamentally with normal functioning, as opposed to being a mildly discomfort thing, mechosh ve'alma, but you basically function normally. So if you are no fel mishka, if you are in that status, literally someone who has to go to bed, but may not have to go quite that far literally, then there is no gezeira of refuah. There's no prohibition of consuming medicine. But if you are dealing with a nechosh ba'alma, it means I have a very mild headache. I go about my business. I'm a little uncomfortable. So there's a prohibition of engaging in refuah, taking medicines to alleviate the discomfort. Why? So back in the day, when they made medicines, they do this today also, but you and I don't do this in our houses. We go to the pharmacy and we just buy the pills. They would grind up things in order to make the medicine. And Chazal were afraid that if we allow the consumption of the medicine, Shema Yishachek Samamar, maybe someone is then going to go ahead and act as the apothecary and grind up spices in order to make a concoction to make a medicine. So therefore, in situations where it's a Mechosh Ba'alma only, then there's a prohibition of consuming medicines. Once a person is already Nofel Mishkav, so then there's no gzeiras refuah anymore, although generally speaking, unless it's pikuach nefesh, unless there's danger to life, you may not do a malacha even with rabbanon. If you need, you can ask a goy to do the malacha for a chola, but not ayidei yisrael until you reach the level of pikuach nefesh. So, the Gemara says that you're allowed to be bochesh shtus v'shitus v'shabes and to drink zeisam hamitzri. Now, what is, there are two issues here with the shtus. Or the shitus. What the Gemara is citing it here is because the fact that you can consume it on Shabbos suggests that it's not the refuah. The original meaning of the Braisha, Bochashen es Ashtus, has to do with the laws of Lisha. Lisha, the prohibition of kneading, means you're not allowed to take flour and mix it with water and make any kind of paste or dough out of it. And that is potentially a malacha d'oraisa, the malacha of wash. What about something that doesn't quite hang together, that doesn't really form a dough, but it might get a little bit thick?
So the braisa says you're allowed to be bochesh es hashtus Shabbos.
The way the Shulchan Aruch, now I'll read you the Shulchan Aruch. It is in Simen Shin Chaf Aleph, 5th Yud Daled. It's a simen that has a whole variety of different malachos in it. And the Shulchan Aruch says the following. Ein megablin, you're not allowed to, gibel means to mix together water and a flour-like substance. Ein megablin kemach kali harde. If you have grain that was already roasted, in other words, you don't take raw grain and make flour, you take roasted grain and you grind it up. Now apparently, I'm no expert in this, but it appears from the Shulchan Aruch that the reason why this, you cannot violate a prohibition of lisha mida oraisa or making any kind of dough out of this is because the particles are much thicker than regular flour and it really doesn't make a proper dough. So you can make some type of a paste, maybe it's something like a dough. But the Mechaber says you're not allowed to make a large amount of it. Shema yavo lalush kemach she'eno kali. Because then you might actually come to make a dough, make a lisha, out of the megabel, something with regular flour, and that would be a prohibition of malacha d'oraisa. So they banned doing a lot. But umuter legabel esakli ma'at ma'at. You can make a kind of shinui. You can do it in an unusual way, so that you'll remember that this is something you have to be careful about on Shabbos. If you have a grain that never reached a third of its growth, this is shetisa. This is the Shulchan Aruch definition that I mentioned before. Shlish shekalu osa, you roast it. The achar kach tachanu osa p'china gasa sharehu kechol, and then you grind that up in a way, but you have big particles, so it's more like sand than like flour. Vehi hanikres shesisa, it's called shesisa. So mutar legadol mimena bechometz v'chayotze bo harbe bebasachas v'hu sheyera. You can make a large quantity of it as long as it's very loose. Aval kasha osur, you can't make a large amount of a thicker dough. Mimnei shenira kilosh. Okay, so the purpose of this braisa is to tell us that there is no malacha of lisha involved when you're bochesh es hashtus. To be bochesh really means to stir it with a spoon. But think about it, when you take water and flour and you stir it with a spoon or a mixer, which does the same thing, that's how you get a dough. So shetisa, shitus, you're allowed to do on Shabbos. The Shulchan Aruch's qualification, and it really comes from the Gemara, is that it's a loose shetisa. And you can be shoset zesom hamitzri. Zesom hamitzri, the Gemara in Arvei Rashi tells you to look in the third parak of Psachim, where the Gemara there says, there are a couple of different versions, but you take, I think, a third, it says it's a third saffron, a third salt, and a third either barley or a third wheat. And you must have some liquid in there, and you mix it all up. That's called zesom hamitzri. So there's obviously a partial concern of hummus there. But what the Bryce and Shabbos says is you're allowed to eat, you can make shtus on Shabbos, and you can drink zesom hamitzri. Now, obviously, the relevance of telling us you're allowed to drink zesom hamitzri is to tell you that it is not considered a problem of refuah. And if you're allowed to make shtus on Shabbos, you're only allowed to make something on Shabbos that you're allowed to eat on Shabbos. So if you're allowed to eat the shesisa on Shabbos, how can it be an element of refuah, as Rav Chista had just suggested? So the Gemara says, the isal kadaitach lerefuah kamechave, refuah b'Shabbos nishari, are you allowed to consume medications on Shabbos? Because, you know, is it permitted? So Amar Le'abaye, Abaye says, what are you talking about, Yosef? Pe'atlo tizbra, no. V'hotinan, kola ochlam, ochlam adam l'rfuah b'Shabbos, v'hamashkim shosa. If you have food or a beverage that has a refuah function, but people do eat it or drink it otherwise, so then it's not a problem with refuah on Shabbos. To give you a weird example of this, going back to our discussion before, they say in the name of the Rav, the Rav permitted aspirin on Shabbos. The argument he made was that aspirin was also machal bria. There is no gzeira on refuah if you're healthy and you're taking something from prevention. It's only if you're already a chola with a mechush, then there's a gzeira on refuah. So apparently the Rav said that aspirin, I mean, probably still have it today. I don't know, David, you could tell us whether this is still the recommendation of people where there's a concern of potential heart condition to take, you know, a baby aspirin or a small quantity of aspirin every day. That's
I love this.
What's that?
It's, the recommendation is getting softer and softer.
Right, okay, less and less. But once upon a time, when the Rav was postulating this, I guess, he said that aspirin was considered machal bria. Okay. So if you have such a thing, I think vitamins would probably fall in that category. I don't know whether they're actually useful at all, but being the case, if someone is taking vitamins because they have a potential deficiency, but they're not actually sick right now, so that would be considered machal bria. So that's not really food in the classic sense, but certainly if you have a food, let's say that, I don't know, you pick a particular food that's really good for a particular condition that a person has, but it's a food. So it doesn't matter if you're eating it because you want the rapport function. Since it's a food, it's permitted.
Rabbi said for Rabbi Yosef, look, shasisa and zesa mamitzri are foods. Sometimes people consume them for refuah purposes. So therefore, he says, elamai islachal meimar. Why is it permitted to make shtus and to drink it and to drink zesa mamitzri? So the Gemara has two versions. I'm not really sure what the difference is. I mean, I see the difference, but elamai islachal meimar gabra lachila kamachavin hachanami gabra lachila kamachavin. So the person here, when he's drinking this or consuming this shasisa, he's doing it for four purposes. So therefore, just as by Shabbos, you're allowed to consume it, because it's a food. So too here, or the Gemara then maybe it's just spelling out lishna chrina elamai islachin lemeimar gavra lachila kamachavein refuah memela kahavya hakanami lachila kamachavein. Reform the male of Tahavia. The Gemara says, look, you're eating it as a food, and before it comes along with it, it suggests even that the intent is such. But the bottom line, Abaye says, is that the fact that the Mishnah tells you that it's permissible to make and consume shasisa on Shabbos doesn't mean that it is not being, that you don't also do it for the purposes of refuah. Hence, Rav says that if you have a very loose shasisa, then you make a bracha of shahat alam. So now the Gemara says the following. Utsricha dirav. If we know that the Mishnah in Shabbos, tells us that you can consume shasisa on Shabbos, even though it's done the refuah, because you're eating, so that's not enough to tell us that you make a bracha on it, as the Gemara explains. Utsricha dirav. Why? The ime hai, if you were looking at the Mishnah in Shabbos, so when you do it on Shabbos, apparently, we say, havamina, la'achila kamachavein, urafumame l'kahavya. On Shabbos, you have to at least go through the pretense as you're eating it, and the refuah happens to come along with it. But aval hacha, and when you consume it otherwise, kevon de l'chatchila l'refuah kamachavein, you're allowed to do anything for refuah, and you're allowed to consume medicines for refuah during the week. You would have thought that you're really doing it just for refuah, you don't have any kavana for an achila element, which you would affect, need to have on Shabbos. Even though it's kind of just a loophole, we know why you're doing it. So you would have thought here you're doing it only for report purposes. Lo livrech elave kla. You shouldn't have to make any bracha because you're not eating. You're just having your food. Amash malon. What Rav teaches us, kevan the ismei hanamina, even though its primary purpose is for refuah, since you do get the enjoyment of eating on some level from it, you have to make a bracha. But since it's not its typical form, the way it's consumed, and its primary purpose isn't for eating, you don't make a mazonos on it, you make only a shahar. Okay. Now the Gemara moves on to bread. So the Mishnah, remember, had said, al peiro sa'aretz hu omer bari pri ha'adama, except for alapas, shalapas hu mabari hamotzi lechem min haaretz. Now, what actually is the bracha that you're supposed to recite? Tana rabbanan mahu omer, Hamotzi lechem min haaretz. Rabbi Nechemya Omer, no. Motzi lechem min haaretz. So what is the debate about? So here we have to have a very brief review of our grammar. The form motzi is technically, for grammarians, it's what's called a participle. It's really an adjective. It's a verbal adjective, but it's an adjective. When we were taught in school that motzi is hove, which is the present tense verb. So it's not really a verb, but we'll go along with that for our purposes. It functions as such. So it's strange how motzi lechem min ha'aretz read that way, or motzi lechem min ha'aretz on the surface would be speaking in the present tense. God brings bread out of the earth, as opposed to God brought bread out of the earth, which we are now eating. And the Gemara assumes that really we want to be speaking in the past tense. Of course, in one sense, God does not bring bread forth from the earth. God brings wheat forth from the earth. Man makes the bread. But that said, the Gemara, the bracha is actually based upon a pasuk that the Gemara is going to quote. I think the Gemara quotes it. Did Mark quote it? No, only Tosis. Only Tosis quotes it. So the Gemara says the following: Amar Rava, v'motzi, if you don't put a hay on the front, kule alma lo pligi da apet mashma. Everybody agrees that it can have the implication, it can be mashma di apet. Apet in Aramaic is a past tense verb. If you're looking for the root of the word apet, you probably recognize it, like from Naskamina. Apek is a contraction of anpek, and the sak in Aramaic means to go out. So anpek is the Aramaic here field, the causative. So God caused bread to come out of the land. So
the Gemara not spoke, like the word lehit apek, like to hold back. It's a totally different word.
No, that totally different word. That root is alapekof. Lehit apek. This is, the root is, it had it been a hispile, it would have been lehit napek. But this is a, it also happens to be that, that nefak is an Aramaic root. And I don't know that it's found anywhere in the Hebrew portions of Tanakh. I don't want to say absolutely not, but I don't think so. Whereas lehit apek is just, is biblical Hebrew. So the Gemara says the apek mashma. What it means here is past tense. Dechsiv, kel motziam mi Mitzrayim. This is part of Bilam's blessing. And when he's speaking about God taking them out of Egypt, God took them out of Egypt. Kel motzi am Mitzrayim is the God who took them out of Egypt. So you see, motzi without the hay can mean past tense. Key plea, where they argue, is the hamotzi. Rabbanan savri hamotzi the apik mashma, that even with the hay, it has the same implication. Dechsiv, hamotzi lechamayim mitzur hachalamish. Moshe Rabbeinu was speaking at the end of 40 years in the desert, speaking about all of the chesed that God did with the Jewish people. And he says, Hamotzi l'chamayim mitzura chalamish. He brought water forth for you from the hard rock. So you see, Hamotzi is past tense also. The Rabbi Nechemiah Savar, no. Hamotzi is dimatek mashma. The mem there is the marker of the participle, like in Hebrew, midaber or malvish. So he believes that hamotzi has the meaning normally of de mapek, who is taking out, and that's not what we want in this prophet. Shenema, hamotzi esem mitachas sivlos mitzrayim. This is at the beginning of Parshas Va'era, where Moshe Rabbeinu is the four Lashonos of Geula, and he speaks about God, hamotzi esem mitachas sivlos mitzrayim, who brings you out from underneath the burdens, the burdens of the Egyptians. Now, God had not yet taken them out. You could say that at that point, God had begun taking the Jewish people out. Who is taking you out? But you can't say yet who took you out. So Rabbi Nechemiah says that Hamotzi has the valence of present tense. The Rabbanon, how did the Rabbanon deal with that pasuk? Now, it's worth noting one thing at the outset before we continuing. Obviously, Hamotzi can mean either. Yet the preference from Nehemiah seems to be adopting the position that if Hamotzi, let me correct what I just said. It's clear even if Rabbi Nehemiah is correct about this pasuk, Hamotzi Samitachas of those Nefayim, there are Hamotzis which are past tense. So Rabbi Nehemiah's objection presumably has to be rooted in the notion that when we have the form Hamotzi in Tanakh, sometimes it means present tense. Whereas I haven't taken the concordance to check, but he must be assuming that motzi, without the hay, wherever it appears in Tanakh, only happens to have the meaning of past tense. So he would rather resolve the ambiguity in the pasuk. So then the Gemara's question is, well, why did the Chachamim stick to a nusach of hamotzi if hamotzi is multivalent and it's not just past tense, it's also present tense? So the Gemara says, no. Rabbanan would say, hahu, what do they do with that case? Hachi kamar lahu. This is what the Torah is saying. Hachi kamar lahu kucha brichu liyisrael. This is what God was saying to the Jewish people. Kad ma pikna lachu. When I take you out of Egypt, avidna lachu milsa, I will do something for you. I will do it in a manner. Ki heche viyad itu danavu da pachises semi mitzrayim. I will do it so that you will know that I was the one who took you out of Egypt. In other words, the point is, Moshe is saying, God is going to do all these things, but go al tiyeshem bizaron tiyah, vidatem, and by doing all these things, when I finally take you out, you will know that I was the one who took you out of Egypt. So, it's projecting into the future a past tense. That's how the Rabbanan read that passage.
Like in Yaribon, al tekiyat amir, migoy galusa.
No. That
no, not. Oh.
That outtake that's an imperative.
Uh-huh.
The form outtake, in Hebrew, they're close, but they're not the same. They're hotzi and hotse are the past and imperative. And Aramaic outtake is both the past tense and it's the masculine singular imperative.
Uh-huh.
So outtake yos amech is a plea to God, take your nation, migo galusa, out of the exile. It's not a statement what God did in the past. Okay. So, the Gemara now tells a story about the Nusach question. Mishtab Kumche Le Rabbonon, Le Rabbi Zeira, the Rabbonon were praising to Rabbi Zeira. Now, if you ignore the brackets for the moment, it says, Bar Rav Zvid, the son of Rav Zvid, apparently he has no name, Achuha the Rabbi Shimon Bar Rav Zvid, who was the brother of Rabbi Shimon, the son of Rabbi Zvid. Now, the truth is, if Rabbi Zvid had a son, Rabbi Shimon, and there was another son, that other son would be the son of Rabbi Zvid. But what happened to his name? So if you look in brackets, this emendation seems to have been based upon the Marshal. He says that the Gemara, the name slipped out of the Gemara. The first name slipped out. So that's why they added S Bar Rav Zvid. There was some Bar Rav Zvid that they were praising. So this is one of those examples where apparently the Marshal must not have had very good manuscripts in front of him, because if you were to, I don't think I still have it here to show you. No, I apologize. I had it up earlier on my screen to show you a wonderful tool, which you're never going to use, called Pachi Garcina. It's part of the Friedberg Geniza project. And it's a beautiful thing. David, you might appreciate this. You remember back to the days of Shear, maybe occasionally we had a critical edition where it's not word for word, but they basically have all the manuscripts and divided in blocks so you can compare them against one another. So I took a little look there, and it turns out that the solution to the problem is a very, very simple one. There's an error in the printed text, and pretty much all the manuscripts read as follows. The Rabbanan praised the Rabbi Zeira, Rav Zvid, Avua the Rabbi Shimon Bar Rav Zvid. So you have to change two things. You have to take out the bar, not the son of, but they're speaking highly of Rav Zvid. And it's not the brother of, but Avuha, the father of Rabbi Shimon Bar Rav Zvid. Now, who was the father of Rabbi Shimon Bar Rav Zvid? This is, what was the color of George Washington's white horse? The father of Rabbi Shimon Bar Rav Zvid is Rav Zvid. So that's who they were praising. They were talking about, now, why does the Gemara describe him this way? It's a very strange way.
I have to say Bar Rav Zvid.
Right, so the answer is that apparently it must have been Rabbi Shimon Bar Rav Zvid is a better known character. So when we're going to talk about Rabbi Zvid, you want to know, well, there may be lots of Rav Zvids around, we know who this is. But if you say he's Rav Zvid, the father of Rabbi Shimon Bar Rav Zvid, now I know who you're talking about. So sometimes...
Is that in manuscript? The Bar Rav Zvid part is in the old manuscript?
Yes. It's the manuscripts all have, they praise Rav Zvid, Avua, the Rabbi Shimon Bar Rav Zvid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know, sometimes, children suffer for being known the child of so-and-so. Sometimes parents have the zechus of being known as the parent of so-and-so. Sometimes it's a chovah, but hopefully most of the time it's a zechus when our children outshine us and they know, oh, that's, you know, yeah, his son is so-and-so. So, halavai, king yuretzon for all of us. So, in this case, it would seem that his son was the better-known character. So they praised Rav Zvid, the Adam Gadol, that he was an outstanding person. Uvaki bebrachos. He was expert in the text of brachos. So he apparently won the brachos fee in his yeshiva. So Amar Lahem, but Zera was a little bit, you know, okay, let's see. Kishlechseyavo liyatan, havi uliyadi. When you run into him, there's one that manuscript in the Beis Medrash, the one manuscript that says that this was happening in the Beis Medrash, I think. So he said the next time he stops by, bring him to me. I'd like to meet him. He wanted to give him a bechina. He wanted to see if he was such a bucky. I heard they say this guy is an Eloi, such a great Talmid Chacham. So I'm going to talk to him and learn it. I'll find out whether or not it's, whether that's correct or whether it's, we would say the Olam is a Goylam. And they don't know what they're talking about. They think he's the Gadol Hador. Instead, he barely passed the Smicha. The Zimrachada, one time, Ikla Legabe, he happened to be visiting, and so Apiku Le Rista, they brought him bread, and they invited him to make the bracha. Pasach the Amar Motzi, he used the text Motzi Lachem in Arab. Amar Rosera said, Zehu Sha'omim Alav the Adam Gadol, Ubaki the Brachos. This is the guy you're telling me he's the big Baki in Brachos. Bishlama had he, and there's a very, very funny formulation here. Bishlama Amar Hamotzi, had he said Hamotzi, Ashmeina and Taima, Ashmeina de Hilchasakarabanon. He would have both taught us the papers of that pasuk of Hamotzi Ashemitachas de Los Mitzrayim, and he would have taught us that we pass it like the Rabbanon, not like a Nechad. Ella the Amar Motzi. But when you say motzi, my kamashmon, what does he teach you? So it's a very strange thing. The Gemara will give its own answer to defend his behavior, but isn't the answer obvious? Maybe he held lipaskin like Rabbi Nechemiah. Like, why should it be that he can't be holding Nechemiah? You're saying he should have said hamotzi. So A, he would have taught us what the pasuk means. B, he would have taught us halacha like Rabbanan. Maybe he said motzi because he thinks the pasuk doesn't mean that, and we don't pasuk like the Rabbanan. Now the Gemara says the reason why I did it is, why do you have to go into machlokas? Everybody agrees motzi means past tense. But hamotzi is a machlokas. So he said, why do I have to pick the nusach that's a debate between Rav Nechemiah and the Chachamim? Let me pick the nusach that everybody in principle agrees to, conveys the meaning that we wish the bracha to convey. And the Gemara concludes, the Hilchasa hamotzi lechem in aretz, we pask in hamotzi. Says Kaimon Kirabanan da Amre da Apek Mashra. Okay. Now, here, and I hope Larry will appreciate this as a Valkyria, Tosfos asks the question, what was wrong with Rabbi Nechemiah's logic? So he says, the top Tosfos says, Apalpi de Bemotzi Kule Amalo Pligi de Apek Mashma. Even though everybody agrees that Motzi alone would convey the proper meaning, nonetheless, Tosa says, when I read with my correction, the Yerushalmi Mefarish Taima, Kidei Shalom La'arei Ha'osios, Kigon Ha'olam Motzi. You know why we choose Ha'motzi? Because if you chose Motzi, somebody might run the Bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Motzi Lechem in Aretz. And you lose your mem. And we learned about this phenomenon earlier. What's that? Well, I know, because that is theoretically any Aleph, any glottal stop at the beginning, but the Chol Levavcha, the Avatem Nehira, the Chol Levavchem, there are eight of them in Kriya Shema, but four of them are Bechol, followed by Levav, and the other four I should know, but I don't remember. Hamotiyasem, Aniyashem of Hamotiyasem, Meyaretz Mitzrayim, I said Avatem Nehira, I forget what the other two are at the moment. The other two are not a problem for us. They're only a problem for the Syrians. Esev v'sadacha and hakanaf v'seal. We spoke about this when we did the Gemara in the second paragraph. So there is this concept of being mafrid v'enad v'ekim, of not swallowing the letters. So here, choosing the nusach of hamotzi is prophylactic. That's what Tosa says. Now, of course, it doesn't solve the problem totally, because hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz is still a problem. So Tosa says, Nami Ika Iru, there's a mixing of the letters. So the reason why we stick with that nusach, and is why did the Chacham make up such a nusach? Hamotzi Lechem is going to set you up to run them together. So Tosa says, the Shani Hasam the Kroksiv, Matzmiach Chatsir Lab Hema, the Esev La Avodas Ha'adam, Lahotzi Lechem Min Ha'aret. That is obviously the source for the bracha. Now there, it is neither the participle with the hay, nor the participle without a hay, it's the infinitive. Lahotzi Lechem Min Ha'aret. And incidentally, just again for those who are more medakfikim, the word is normally motzi. But when the next word, lechem, has the accent on the first syllable, it is awkward to pronounce two primary accents in a row. And so in this particular case, most people say, amotzi lechem. And they happen to be correct in this case, because the accent on lechem is on the first syllable. It pushes back the accent on the word on hamotzi. You see that in the pasuk. It's not lahotzi lechem min haaretz, but it's lahotzi lechem min haaretz. Okay. Fine. So that's why Tosa suggests once we have the option of putting a hay on the front, we would rather do that so at least we can avoid running together the mem of melech ha'olam with the mem of motzi, so we stick a hay on the front. You can't solve all the problems of the world, but you can solve some of them.
Lahotzi itself as part of the bracha wouldn't make any sense because that certainly would not be the best, I assume.
Well, Lahotzi lechem, again, in the pasuk it makes sense, but it makes no sense in the bracha.
Right. Exactly.
Unless you've got to take bread, no, you're praising God for
right.
Took bread out of
took bread, one. Right.
Tosus at the end here quotes a practice, which many people do. The Alkane, Yesh Livtsoa B'shtei Yada Be'eser Etzvos Neged Yud Tevo Shebemikvazeh. Means that when you make the bracha, you see some people do this, they put both hands on the lechem, because they're putting 10 fingers on it, because there are 10 psukim in this pasuk, which is, Matzmiach Chatzir La Behema, Ve'esev La Avodas Ha'adam, that's 6, Lahotzi Lechem Min Ha'aretz. And this particular minag is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, in Arachayim, in the laws of Betziah Sakas, of breaking bread. Okay. Fine, so the bottom line is, we know what bracha we make on bread, which is amotzi lechem min haaretz. Now, if you look in the Mishnah itself, the Gemara now notes, v'al ha'yirakos, it immediately follows v'al yirakos omer. Now, the Gemara thinks, therefore, there's an analogy being made between pas and the immediately yirakos that are followed. They obviously don't have the same bracha. Pas is the bracha of Hamotri, and Yirakos has the bracha of Adama. But the Gemara assumes that there's a similarity between Yirakos and Pas, which is Ma Pas, Shenishtana Ayyadeh Ha'or, Af Yirakos Nami Shenishtana Ayyadeh Ha'or. Just as you make the special bracha on bread, as it has been changed, processed, transformed by fire, so too you can make the bracha of Adama on Yirakos, even though they have been transformed by heat, which is namely, you have boiled the vegetables. The Gemara says, Ama Rabbinoi Nishmei Dabayai, Zos Omeres Shlakos Mavarchan Alehen Oreit Lihadam. From this, you see that if you have vegetables and you cook them, you still make Ha'adama on the vegetables, because it is Yirakos, Dumya the Pas, just as the Pas has been transformed by heat and it gets the special bracha. Yirakos get their bracha, I don't know if it's so special, they get their bracha even though they've been transformed by heat. Now, obviously, the possibility might have gone through one's mind that when you, in fact, cook vegetables, you have changed them from their natural state and maybe you no longer make the bracha Borei Pri Adam. So that's why the Gemara says, Zoso Meres, you see from the Mishnah's Smichus, the comparison by juxtaposition, that if you cook vegetables, you still make Adama. Dorash Rav Chisda, Mishum Rabbeinu, Rav Chisda taught in the name of our teacher, Umanu, who was that? Rav. Shlokos Mevarchan Aleim Varei Pri Ha'adama. And then Rav Chisda continued, the Rabosenu Hayordim Me Eretz Yisrael, and our rabbis, our teachers who came from Eretz Yisrael, Umanu, who is that Ula? Mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan, Ula the name Rabbi Yochanan, Amar, Shlokos, Mevarchan Aleihem, Shehakol, Nehiyeh, Bizal. that you make a shahakal. Why? Apparently, because you've changed them. At least that's the first impression we get. So now, Vani Omer, and Rav Fista says, that kosh, that there's no machlokas, there's no debate between Rav and Rav Yochanan. Kosh etzilaso borei pri hadama, any fruit, any vegetable, that initially you make a borei pri hadama before you process it, meaning it is normally eaten raw. Then shlako, if you cook it, then it's taken it out of its normal state, and it's shahakoni ebed baro. But shachol shetchilaso shahakol, anything that normally if you eat it raw, that's not normal, and therefore you make a shahakol, shahakol ebed baro, then if shlako, borei pri hadama, you make the bracha borei pri hadama. Why? This position of Rav Chista is that you make a borei pri hadama on vegetables when you eat them in the normal way those vegetables are eaten. If they are vegetables that are normally eaten raw, then you make a borei pri hadama when they're raw, but when you cook them, you don't. If they're normally eaten cooked and not eaten raw, then you make a borei pri hadama only when you cook them. And Tosfos will add, if they are eaten both cooked and raw, for example, I'll give, Tosfos doesn't give it, carrots. Carrots are eaten very commonly raw. They're also eaten very commonly cooked. In that case, Tosfos says, and I believe the Shulchan Aruch, that you make a borei pri hadama both when you eat them cooked and when you eat them raw. In other words, for this opinion, whenever you eat something in the way that it's normally eaten, a vegetable, then you make a borei pri hadama. If it's normally eaten one way, that's when you do it. The other way, that's when you do it. Both ways, then you make the bracha borei pri hadama both ways. That's how Rav Chista presented this debate. Now the Gemara says, the Shlama, I know that there are vegetables that are inedible raw, and you cook them, and that's how you eat them. Mashkachas, you can find it bikrava, cabbage, basilka, beets, vikara, which are squash. Ela, kosha, chilaso, bare pri adama, shlako, shahako, what kind of a vegetable is there that is eaten normally raw, but when you cook it, it's not normal and you make a shahako? So, Amar of Nachman bar Yitzchak, mashkachas la betume bekarte, with shum, which is garlic, and karte, or kreshen, or leeks, which they're all members of the onion family. Now, I find this to be kind of interesting, because I don't know of anybody who eats garlic and leeks raw. Now, you might have, certainly onions and leeks, you might have in a salad, but you'd never be making a bracha on them, because they would be a tafel. It's very unpleasant to eat garlic or onions raw. Certainly, be'en, when they're sort of on their own. Again, in a salad, you can, you know, when it's mixed with other things, it's, you can eat it raw. But to eat, you know, just to take an onion and eat it raw seems to be rather, unpleasant. Now, Tosfos was actually, though, noted something very odd. When you put an onion in the cholent, the cooked onion is delicious. So Tosfos says, no, it's delicious because the flavor of the meat. Now, I do imagine it might be the case if you took an onion and you just boiled it in water, that might not be very appealing. I have no idea. I've never tried it. I know had at home in restaurants where they'll take an onion, wrap it in a piece of foil and throw it on the grill and grill that onion whole, and it is rather delicious. I mean, certainly we chop up onions and we grill them, but I don't know about cooking them in water. But okay, so the Gemara, bottom line is, I would say these are also things that are obviously subject somewhat to social change. Now, I don't think some of these have changed. I don't think people usually eat beets raw. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. For that matter, people don't eat raw squash, to the best of my knowledge. It'd be pretty hard, at least the squash that I know. It depends. The real squashes, the gourds, and not the zucchini. I don't know the botanical relationship between them. But butternut squash and acorn squash, and I've never had it actually at the end, but pumpkin, which is also a squash, I don't think you can really eat those raw. I could be mistaken, but I don't think so. So we have the things that we can only eat. Well, we have the things that you would never cook. You don't cook a cucumber, although you do cook a cucumber, but not in heat. You pickle it. We'll talk about that later. You certainly do not cook lettuce. That's a fairly good thing. If you want a room lettuce, just soak it in hot water for 30 seconds, and you will find the lettuce to be rather unpleasant. So there are vegetables that are not eaten raw. There are vegetables that are only eaten raw. And then there are dual-use vegetables, so we'll put our carrots in that entry. So that's what the Gemara has said until now, that there's really no contradiction. According to Rav Sisla, there's no contradiction between Rav and Rav Yochanan. Now, the Gemara continues. Darash Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman, as opposed to Rav Sisla, has a different version of the story. Mishum Rabbeinu, from our teacher, Umanu, who is our teacher, Shmua. Rashi would seem, right, all right, yeah, never mind. So, what did Shmuel say? Shlakos mevarach on aleihem barei pri ha'adama, v'chaveirenu hayordim me'eretz Yisrael, umanu ula mishved Rabbi Yochanan, amar shlakos mevarach on aleihem shakol yevavar. The only thing that changes right now between these, from Rav Chista's presentation from Nachman's, is that Rav Chista was citing Rav, his Rebbe, and Rav Nachman was citing Shmuel, his Rebbe, saying the exact same thing. And how did they refer to Ula? Rav Chista referred to him as Rabbeinu, Rabboseinu, Hayor de Meretz Yisrael, because apparently he was of the student stature compared to Ula. But Rav Nachman considered himself a peer, so he said, Chaveirenu. But substantively, the two presentations are the same. Except, how do you reconcile the seeming debate between Rav and Yochanan? So, va'ani omer, and I say, v'machlokes shnuya. That really, it's actually a machlokes, and it's an old machlokes, the machlokes of Tanayim too. D'tanya, yotzin v'ritik hashari uv'mavushol shalom yimoach v'ivrei Rabbi Meir. We're too late for Pesach now. If you take your matzah, and it's hard to eat, and you soak it in water. So firstly, one of the things you see from the Gemara is they weren't worried about the rocks. Because you're taking your matzah, you're soaking it in water, and you want to use it. You want to know, are you allowed to use it for the mitzvah matzah? So the Gemara says that according to Rabbi Meir, you can use a soaked matzah, soaked, which means you soak it in water, let's say lukewarm or cold water. And even if it's mavushal, as long as it doesn't fall apart. And Rabbi Yosei Omer, Yotzim Berekik HaSharoi Avoloba Mavushal Afal Pi Shalom Imoah. So Rabbi Yosei says, once you cook the matzah, even though it didn't fall apart, you still can't use it. So basically, it's an achlokes for me and Rabbi Yosei, whether or not cooked matzah is good for the mitzvah or not. Now, the Gemara is assuming that means it's an achlokes whether you make hamotzi on cooked matzah, or you don't make hamotzi, and if you don't make hamotzi, it's not lechem anymore, and hence it's not lechem only. That was the Gemara's hachamina. The Gemara says, Zelohi, that's wrong, that's not what the machlokas is about. The chulei alma, they would both agree, Rab Meir and Rabbi Yosei, shlakos mevarachan aleihem barei pri ha'adama. And in fact, if you take your matzah now, tonight, and you soak your matzah, everybody agrees, you make hamotzi. If you cook it, everybody agrees, you make hamotzi. So what are they arguing about? They're arguing about on the night of Pesach, ad kan lo tamar Rabbi Yosei hasam, ele mishum tibbeinan tam matzah v'lechem. No, you know why you can't be Yosei, according to Rabbi Yosei? Because if you cook it, it loses the tam of matzah. So I think Rabbeinu Yonah was bothered by this, because who says matzah requires tam? The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, that I think it's in Rosh Hashanah, or maybe it's in Arvei Pesachim. It's Arvei Pesachim. The Gemara says if you take matzah, I think, and you korech besiv, you wrap it in something that's edible, and you swallow it, I think the Gemara says you're yotzei. But if you do that to maror, the Gemara says you're not yotzei. Why? Because tam maror, ve'inan, you have to be able to taste the maror. You don't have to be able to taste the matzah. You just have to eat the matzah. So if you're korech it in another food, you wrap the matzah in a piece of lettuce or something like that, and you swallow it that way, even though you don't really taste the matzah, it goes out. It doesn't matter. But the maror, I know the lettuce is the maror. Okay, so you wrap it in something else. You're not yotzei when it comes to maror. So Rabbi Yonah asks, how can the Gemara say Rabbi Yosei holds that you're not yotzei because you need tam matzah? You don't need tam matzah. So he says it doesn't mean tam matzah. He quotes Rabboseinu HaTzarfatim, not in our Tosfos, but he quotes the French rabbis who say no. What it means is it's no longer lechem oni. If you take matzah and you cook it in water, it's now matzah ashira. That's, in other words, it's not just the ingredients, even in the form that it appears. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah said. Okay, fine. So the bottom line then is that the Gemara here has a machlokas amoraim as to what the machlokas amoraim was, or whether there was a machlokas amoraim. Rav Chisda says that Rav and Rav Yochanan did not debate this point. They both agree that shlakos are hadama if it's normal to eat them shalok, and it's shahakol if it's not normal. Whereas it would appear, according to Rav Nachman's presentation, that Shmuel and Rav Yochanan argue, actually, whether or not you make a ever make a borei pri adama on vegetables that you cook. Or do you say that once you cook the vegetables, it's no longer the original pri ha'adama, and hence it does not get a bracha of borei pri adama. That's where the Gemara stands right now. I'm not going to push on. The Gemara, God willing, next week we will resume in person, and then we will continue to see how the Gemara finishes this and how one reads the conclusion of the sukkah. Any questions?